Ms. Meyer versus DJ Forsey. I show on my sheet that Attorney Kaczynski has 10 minutes arguing for Mr. Linsmeyer. Mr. Meredith has 15 minutes arguing for WEAC. There's 30 minutes for Mr. Harrison arguing for the Wisconsin Newspaper Association amicus. You've been given permission to argue for that. And 5 minutes in rebuttal by Bruce Meredith. Is that your understanding? Okay. We will proceed. Attorney Kaczynski.
Members of the court, I'm Attorney Len Kaczynski. I represent Armin Linsmeyer. After nearly 30 years, Armin Linsmeyer was a math teacher and a volleyball coach at Neenah High School. He was an ordinary teacher in an ordinary mid-sized Wisconsin town. During December and November of 2000, two students at Neenah High School made allegations that he may have engaged in conduct they thought was inappropriate. The Neenah Police Department, as well as the Neenah Joint School District, conducted separate investigations for separate potential proceedings regarding that conduct by Mr. Linsmeyer. As a result of the investigation, police report was generated by the Neenah Police Department, but there was no citations issued, no criminal charges filed, no official action was taken whatsoever. Mr. Forsey, who's the respondent in this case, was the chief of police, and that's why he's been named in this case. Now, neither Mr. Linsmeyer nor his attorney have ever requested a copy of the report. The report contains, according to the trial court's recitation, from the sealed document, inappropriate remarks that were allegedly made by Mr. Linsmeyer to students. There's no evidence of sexual assaults or other type of criminal conduct or ordinance violations. It was not used by the Neenah Joint School District as part of disciplinary proceedings that at one point were contemplated against Mr. Linsmeyer. They conducted their own separate investigation, and the result of that was a settlement by which Mr. Linsmeyer voluntarily retired at the end of the last school year. He was also reassigned to other duties, and there wasn't any information that they were going to release unless it was required by law. Now, the Appleton Post Crescent and also parents of the two complaining children requested release of that report under the open records law. They didn't request any records from the Neenah Joint School District. Once that request was made, Linsmeyer filed a summons complaint seeking to block release of those unredacted police reports regarding this alleged misconduct by Mr. Linsmeyer. The city attorney of Neenah at that time, James Guns, issued a letter dated January 2nd of 2001 indicating that the report would be released in a redacted form, although the letter did not indicate exactly what it was he intended to redact. He indicated that he thought there was a public policy that was favoring release of that particular document and that there was no statutory exception that prohibited release or an overriding public interest, whether it was the interests of this, Mr. Linsmeyer in his reputation or his privacy or any interest of the school district.
Mr. Kaczynski, assuming that there is an overriding public policy, looking at the Wasnicki case and others, it seems to me here that it went before Judge Key. She looked at the law, she did a balancing test, and she did what is expected. And that, is there something else you're saying that she failed to do?
I think it goes to the factors that she considered in making her decision.
What were those factors?
She said the factors were the fact that the conduct engaged in was open and not secretive.
In fact, a lot of that was reported in the Appleton Post Crescent, wasn't it?
As a matter of fact, it was, yes.
Yeah. So really, it's already out in the public domain, isn't it?
Well, the fact that the case is there is out. The specifics as to what the allegedly inappropriate remarks are is not in the public domain. And if the police report was released, at least it potentially could be published in the newspaper anywhere by anybody who cared to do so. The injunction was A request for an injunction or a restraining order was denied, but the matter was stayed pending appeal, which was taken by Linsmeyer.
What is the primary thing that you rely on to not disclose these records?
Well, the primary thing that we rely on are some of the underlying policies that go through the balancing test of Wozniacki, and that is the protection of the privacy and reputational interests of lower-level public employees as opposed to the public interest in openness and wanting to evaluate the function of government. I think that the mere fact that Mr. Linsmeyer was a public employee, which seemed to be the stress, the issue that Judge Key stressed, really didn't apply with as much force to him as it would perhaps to a school superintendent or to an elected official. And I think...
Are you asking this court to, in effect, conduct a balancing, weighing, balancing process? You're not pointing to any specific rule of the common law or any statutory exception?
I think the court perhaps needs to issue a decision that delineates more clearly the factors that the court needs to consider in a Wozniacki type of situation, and in particular the level of the employee that's involved, if it's a personnel type issue. I think also in this case the functioning of the release of the documents upon other institutions, in particular the Neenah Joint School District, was not considered at all, and I think that's never been established in any case law that the release of the document has to be weighed against how it causes other public institutions to function. And in this case, Mr. Linsmeyer's agreement, which contained a provision providing that those disciplinary records not be released.
Mr. Knutz, do we owe any deference to the city attorney's initial decision, and do we owe any deference to the judge's decision?
I don't think we do. I think it's a wholly independent decision that you can make based upon the facts, which in this case are undisputed, as to what the proper balancing test ought to be. And part of the decision of the city attorney, based on the lack of anticipated enforcement action, for example, is not binding, and there's nothing to say that somebody couldn't change their mind. And as 19.351M indicates, that this document could potentially be used for court proceedings by somebody other than the city. We don't know. And the statute would seem to indicate, if that was the case, that you might not want to release it for that reason as well.
Counsel, as a takeoff of the standard of review, which was just asked by Justice Babbage, the law is that this court's role, it is not this court's role to hypothesize reasons or to consider reasons for not allowing inspection which were not asserted by the custodian. I'm citing from the Nichols versus Bennett case. In that case, there was a declining of releasing the records, but this maxim in the law is cited other places. That is, it isn't for this court to hypothesize reasons that were not asserted by a custodian in the custodian's denial. Are you following me?
Okay. Yes, sir.
Now, here we don't have a custodian's denial. My question is it this court's role to hypothesize reasons for objection to disclosure that were not asserted by you?
I think the court needs to do that in its pursuit of the public interest. Mr. Linsmeyer, you know, has a different interest than the public in the release of the documents, quite obviously. And, for example, it was first asserted in argument by the Wisconsin Education Association in their brief that they should consider the impact of release of this report on the functioning of the school district, I think.
So this court, when there's a denial of a report, we are limited only to looking at the reasons for the denial. But when there is an objection to the release, You're saying we can look to the reasons beyond the objection to the release?
I think the court can, yes.
Well, let me put it into a fact situation, a hypothetical fact situation. Let's assume that in this case, we come down with a decision that spells out what a court on appeal from a person who has involved in a public record and doesn't want it released. We spell out what the various factors are that the court should take into account in doing that. In other words, we go a step beyond Wozniacki and we really spell out a test, or at least standards that they ought to consider. So then it goes back to the trial court, and the trial court applies those standards in the case. Now, it comes back up to us. Do we review that trial court de novo, or do we give that trial court deference?
I think if the court issues a decision that sets forth...
What court? You better be specific.
Sure.
The trial court. Are you saying the trial
court? Right, this court. Excuse me. If this court sets forth a decision that, as the court suggests, establishes more careful criteria for denial or granting of release under Wozniacki, then I believe that the deference in that case would be to the trial court because it would have considered all the relevant factors.
Well, what's the rule now under the case law?
Right now it's a simple balancing test.
No. When we review it, do we make the balance again?
You review the... I think you make a de novo review, yes.
Sure, Ben. Okay, sure.
Thank you.
I believe at this point I'll defer then to a further argument by Mr. Meredith.
Okay, Mr. Meredith. When did the request first come, Mr. Meredith? What's the date?
The request first came, I believe, in late 2000.
Okay, when did the trial court rule?
I'm not certain of the exact date, but three or four months thereafter, I know Mr. Kaczynski would be able to answer that question a little more in detail.
Okay, and then it went up to the Court of Appeals, right? And they certified, in October of 2001. So we're now into a year, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay, and this court took the case when?
The court took it a couple of months ago on certification from the Court of Appeals.
Okay.
Just for those of you who may not know me, I'm Bruce Meredith, and I'm General Counsel of the Wisconsin Education Association Council. And with the gracious consent of Mr. Kaczynski and the court, I've been allowed as an amicus to address this court. And in order to shed light on the important issues raised by this case, and more importantly, what we believe will be the dangerous consequences if the circuit court's ruling is not modified. It was not until Mr. Kaczynski and I began preparing for this argument that we fully understood the complexity and the importance of the case before us. That's perhaps why the Court of Appeals lumped it up here rather than resolving it itself. This seeming simple case raises numerous issues of unresolved policy and law, which, if wrongly resolved, not only could jeopardize the privacy rights of every single citizen in Wisconsin, the effectiveness of their government institutions, but could also imperil their actual physical safety. The Wisconsin newspaper publishers, who apparently are now speaking for the city attorney, recognize this fact. That is precisely why their brief keeps telling this court this is not a case about police records. But they're wrong. This is a case about police records. We do not dispute that if one of the parents has simply registered their concerns within the school district, we might not be here. But that is not what happened. Instead, they filed a criminal complaint, which appears to have been turned out to be baseless. And now the newspapers want the general public to know the complete details of this apparently baseless complaint. As made clear by even the majority opinion in Breyer, police investigative reports are extremely sensitive. That is why that decision itself limited its holding to arrest records. The trial court itself was extremely troubled by the release of police records, but assuaged its fears by noting that the subject involved was a teacher, and he did not dispute most of the allegations. In response to Justice Wilcox's earlier questions, I would suggest that neither of these reasons, these idiosyncratic facts, make this an easier case.
Mr. Meredith, could I ask you, if this had been a request to the Neenah school system as opposed to the Neenah Police Department, would the standards be different?
Well, yes, I do think the standards are different. One of the things I'm going to go into is why police records are so sensitive. This court has already held that district attorney's files are, to a certain degree, exempt from the Open Records Act, and I hope to explain why police files are somewhat similar. But the major difference was the police only had bad information about Mr. Linsmeyer. The school district had a complete record, which would have showed his numerous accomplishments, and the public would have got a much fairer and balanced picture. By going to the police, you got a very distorted view.
Well, then, couldn't the school district have released those documents, or Mr. Linsmeyer?
Your Honor, one of the things we're going to suggest is that the easiest way to resolve this case is tell the requesters to go where they should have gone in the first place, to the school district. And then the school district could have evaluated all the interests, including its effect on its operations and whether they could provide a quality education with the release, and made a decision. And the case would come in a different posture. But this case is here, and the reason why the Court of Appeals certified it is because it was a police record.
Now, wouldn't you be here saying this is a personnel record and therefore exempt from public disclosure?
Well, I might say that, but I would lose because this Court has already said that as a general principle, just saying something is a personnel record does not make it exempt. I am going to try presenting compelling arguments why certain personnel records should be exempt, generally.
So just saying a personnel doesn't make it, just because you're dealing with personnel doesn't make it a personnel record, in your view?
No. Well, I mean, it may make it a personnel record, but that's irrelevant to the Open Records Act. You'd have to go and look at the exceptions in 1985 under the Open Meetings Law and see whether it's the type of thing the government should want to conduct outside of public view. Let me go on to why what I think is the key to this case. I'm looking at the trial court's reasons, because if they're invalid reasons, it must go back. The first was that the person was a teacher. But the purpose of the evaluation, as noted in Breyer, is to evaluate the police department. And the subject matter's occupation, whether a teacher or a carpenter, is usually irrelevant to the quality of the police investigation, unless there's some claim of untoward influence, which isn't the case here. In fact, the most effective way to evaluate the police department would be to do what they did in Breyer, to ask for all the records, or at least a random sample. And therefore, if this court is going to declare police records open, what you are essentially dealing with is the ability of anyone to ask, could I see the police records on every citizen in the state of Wisconsin? And that is really the subtext before this court, and I think why the Court of Appeals certified it. Let's look to the second reason the trial court denied this. That was because Mr. Linsmeyer did not contest many of the allegations against him. Well, in the course of a police investigation, the police may uncover all manner of personal information about someone. Bouts of depression, youthful political party affiliations, marital infidelity, which the subject does not deny, but which have absolutely no relevance to the charge or the police investigation. No doubt these matters would be of great interest to gossip columnists and undoubtedly increase their employer sales and advertising. But I do not think the Open Records Act was intended to spread gossip, even if the subject happened to be paid by a governmental entity. Moreover, under the Open Records Act, the identity and purpose of the request is generally not relevant. Thus, police records can be used as an evaluation tool by public-spirited bodies trying to make the police better. They can also be used by potential criminals trying to find out who is cooperating with the police and where is the best location to set up shop. As a result, we believe this court should not expand Breyer and certainly should not expand it to the release of raw police data. The court could accomplish this in one of two ways. First, it could find a common law basis to limit access to police records, as the court has done with district attorney records. There's logic in doing so, since police records typically are less filtered than even DA records, and therefore will likely contain even more inaccurate and potentially damaging information than the records of district attorneys. In Faust, the court saw the common law as an all-or-nothing matter. And there is value in these bright-line tests. However, the jurisprudence surrounding police records reveal that many courts have struggled with the issues of allowing public oversight of the police without unduly harming law enforcement, without endangering the lives of those citizens cooperating with law enforcement, and not unduly infringing the privacy rights of individuals. As a matter of law, common law policy, I believe these interests can best be reconciled by creating a type of reverse presumption, which assumes that undue harm will flow from the release of raw police data, but which may be overcome by a strong showing for public need of information. I believe such a presumption is warranted because of the enormous potential harm the release of raw police data can create.
Could you say that again? Repeat the presumption that you're suggesting, the reverse presumption?
I believe with police records, there could be a common law reverse presumption that you presume harm, and therefore they will not be released unless there is a showing that harm will not occur. And I believe.
Wasn't there a case in the state? Boy, it just slips my mind. Where the release of police records led to, I think, a death.
That was the paper. I think he's referring to.
Oh, yeah, that's it.
Well, as you, the decisions have pointed out, as was Nikki, occasionally the wrong people get it, the information gets in the hands of the wrong people. And with respect to the custodian, Justice Bradley, I do believe ordinarily the custodian needs the balance. But one of the problems with a lot of the open records decisions is it's almost like a trick for the custodian. Half the decisions aren't decided on the merits. They're decided whether the custodian most accurately got it right. And if you have massive requests, like in Breyer, it's very easy for the custodian to get it wrong. And the consequence of the custodian getting it wrong, nothing bad's going to happen to the custodian. It's the innocent third parties that are going to be harmed. Now, that may be something that is a necessary result of the Open Records Act's administration. But it is certainly not a desirable result. And how one deals with that is problematic.
If the custodian here had declined to release the records, what procedure would a requester utilize?
Most likely mandamus.
And what's the standard of review for a writ of mandamus?
Well, on open records, I think one applies a question of law and fact. And to answer the question on deference, I think in Open Records Act, it is kind of confusing because the court will give some deference to trial court's factual findings. They don't give deference to their legal conclusions.
It's my understanding that in a mandamus that, you know, if there's an erroneous exercise of discretion, and that can be a misapplication of the law, but we review the weighing in a mandamus action, the weighing that's given by the custodian under erroneous exercise of discretion. Do you understand that to be the standard of review for a mandamus?
I do understand. I think what actually happens in open records cases is that there's more focus on substance and less on form. It troubles me that too many of these cases get decided on these very complicated procedure formalities of what's the precise standard of review. The real issue should be, should the information get out or not? You should refer to the trial court's findings of fact and give deference to the custodian's expertise. I think that's the simplest way to do it.
But the law for mandamus review is the appellate court will affirm unless the circuit court erroneously exercised its discretion.
I believe that is the Hornbook law, and I don't know if it's always applied that strictly.
Why should we give deference to the police chief's decision here, given your initial argument? I mean, I can see an argument that we should give greater deference to the maybe the school district's decision, who can, you know, balance all of the
But how can a police, how does the police chief balance all of the effects?
Well, I think it's particularly hard, and that's one of the reasons I think with police records in Breyer, the court was so concerned, because it's very difficult on an individual case to make these very nuanced decisions. And I was trying to develop some sort of more bright line test that would protect the public but still allow principled decision making, particularly when you get requests that wants to look at 200 to 300 police records. There's a real practical problem involved.
Can I go back to the question that Justice Bradley raised about the standard of review? Is there a need to adjust that for purposes of open records law, or adjust that standard of review, because mandamus, which is the method of challenging the denial of an open records request, doesn't lie unless there is found a clear legal duty on the part of the records custodian to release the documents, but the existence of the clear legal duty depends upon a discretionary balancing test, and so there's an inherent conflict in that.
What I see is the problem, how this court wants to address it, is the court has made the technical jurisprudence of open records extraordinarily complex, probably far too complex for the custodians and most practitioners. So for those of us that deal in this arcane area, we understand it, but I don't know if anyone else does. I'd now like to turn to what
Let me just ask you. I always understood that it didn't matter who the custodian was of the record. That is, if you have the same record under four custodians, should it matter who the custodian is before you allow release? For example, here you have some of the same records in the police records, you have the same records in the school records. You might have them in a third place.
Well, I think it's important that the person go to the appropriate custodian. And I think the different custodians will have different interests. One of the things I'd like to turn to now, exactly why I think the Dean of School District might have analyzed this case a little differently, because they were focused, they would want the school district to work. And one of the briefs of the WPP and WEAC, what we keep emphasizing is that it's very important. The purpose of the Open Meeting Act was not to thwart effective functioning of government. It's supposed to educate kids. And viewed as a school matter, what we are concerned about, what we're particularly concerned about, is the standard used and the standard articulated by amicus, which is basically the public has to evaluate its employees. Now, we recognize that's a truism on a certain level, but realistically, evaluation is done through higher levels of supervision. And one of the most difficult things for a supervisor to do is to tell an employee they're doing something wrong, and I'm sure every one of us has faced that. It becomes even more difficult if they know that that's going to be broadcast to the world. And what we fear is the evaluation standard is going to have the perverse effect of changing sensitive evaluation and analytic documents in the public relations spin, because eventually the supervisor will be saying, how will this play in the press? And if that happens, government will be seriously hurt.
Well, but counsel, secrecy, seems to me, is a very dangerous thing. And to say that we let the hierarchy determine what the public should know about its employees is questionable public policy, especially in a government as ours in this state, which cherishes open government. So why do you think we should put all our trust and confidence in the school board, the principal, whoever?
Well, I'm not suggesting you put all your trust and confidence. I'm suggesting you should put at least some of your trust and confidence. And let me tell you why in schools. Can you imagine? Schools and law enforcement are two areas that have particularly problematic public interactions. In schools, they teach young, impressionable, but extremely computer-literate children. Can you imagine what it would be like as an educator going in front of class, knowing that every one of those students knows everything about your professional and personal life? How difficult would it be to control that class? More importantly, why would anyone ever want to take a job like that if that was the condition of employment?
with law enforcement.
Here, all the students, at least in the class, knew what the teacher was saying or doing.
They do.
But why shouldn't that be public?
Because the student should not be able to say when the teacher moves to discipline you, oh, I noticed three years ago management said you were too harsh. Are you being too harsh here, Mr. Jones, again?
Seems
I think that would
be a good
dangerous
discussion point for the teacher and a good educational lesson.
Well, I think most of our educators would differ a little bit. And I just would like to close with...
I wonder if the students would differ.
I actually think that...
Especially a third grader.
Chief, may I ask a question? I want to make sure I understand this part of your argument. Are you suggesting that if the request had been made of the school district, that the response might be different than if the request, that the response would be legally sustainable and could be different than if made to the police department?
Yes, because the school might have considered the fact that when they responded, I mean, one of the purposes of Wisnicki was to give public employees a chance in the court of public opinion. Because that is one of the, if you're a public employee, the court of public opinion is very important. Sometimes with schools, you might conclude that you're not going to release a substantial portion of the report because it would embarrass a student, might compromise privacy records, and I think in that point the school might well say, since we cannot tell most of the truth, we're not going to tell any of the truth, because I think the last thing you want is the public records even going further into harming students.
I don't understand that argument. If the same record was placed in the school file, and you're suggesting there may be a different result, how does that comport with our holding in Nichols and versus Bennett, that it matters not the location of the document, but rather the nature of the document is what we assess?
Well, I see your Nichols holding is a bit narrower. I see Nichols holding is someone cannot secretly protect the document by calling it something other than it is. Now, I realize you might have a broader record, but that's how I read Nichols. And I think the difference is that, first of all, they probably won't have the same document in most instances. The other issue is that I think the school is in a better – had they gone to the school, they would have been in a much better place to evaluate the school. The purpose of these records requests is to evaluate the governmental entity. If you want to evaluate the police department, ask for a police record. If you want to evaluate the school or its employees, ask the school. That's all we're asking.
So doesn't the court, though, have to look at it broader and look at that record and say, as to this record, how do we balance it? I mean, not whether we are evaluating the school, not whether we're evaluating the police, but how we're evaluating government here, and as to the government and government employees, isn't that the broader view so that the court isn't getting trapped as to where the record is kept? Don't we have to look at it as if the record was anywhere?
Well,
otherwise we have different rules for where that same record is kept. Different rule for police, different rule for schools, different rules for Department of Health and Social Services, etc.
I don't see it as having different rules. I think I view it as the court obtaining additional expertise from people who know how that record will impact more particularly. I think it's the same rules. You know, if I might close, I notice my time is up. The purpose of the Open Records Act was written to produce honest, responsive, and effective government. It should be given a construction, in fact, that fosters rather than undermines that intent. Neither the rationale offered by the trial court nor that by amicus produces that result. And therefore, because it doesn't produce that crucial objective, the rationales must be reversed.
Thank you, counsel. Harrison.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the court. My name is Kendall Harrison. I'm with the law firm of LaFollette, Godfrey & Kahn, and I'm here today on behalf of several amicus parties: the Wisconsin Newspaper Association, the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association, the Wisconsin Freedom of Information Council, and the Post Crescent, one of the records requesters in this case. Also with me here today at council table is Mr. Jim Godlewski, who is the city attorney of Neenah. Mr. Godlewski took that position after the briefs were filed in this case and has been kind enough to cede me his oral argument time today. The amicus parties that I'm representing are here today because they have an abiding interest in the state's long tradition of open government. It's a tradition principle that's furthered, maintained, and protected by the Wisconsin Open Records Law. They're here more specifically because that tradition is placed in jeopardy by the appellant's position in this case. If Mr. Linsmeyer is correct, the public has no right to know what public school teachers are doing or saying in their classrooms, including when they make sexually inappropriate comments. Such a result would also mean that the public has no right to the information that it needs to decide for itself whether the school district and the police department took the proper action in this situation.
The counsel, just I asked this question of your opposing counsel, and he responded in some way. This case involves a school teacher, police records. What about if we would write this case in a way that perhaps would open up, is this what you're saying, would open up these police records to public scrutiny? Is that what you're suggesting? What impact are you suggesting to us would this have on this raw police data?
I am suggesting, Your Honor, that the record in this case should be released and should be made open to the public.
Are the key words in this case? What does this do to other cases?
In this case, I think it's clear that the record should be released. In other cases, which are not before the court today, but which the court is understandably concerned with, I think there is an overriding interest that the public has in situations where there is public official misconduct done during public work hours, for example, in a public classroom, and when there's a police investigation of that public misconduct. This court has said, and the Court of Appeals has said on numerous occasions, that the public has a very strong interest in knowing about that public misconduct. So if that information is contained in a police report, and the police have investigated and looked into that situation, the public has a right to know about it.
I'd like to look at the statute, if we can. Okay? 1935-1A gives a broad right to examine records, right? Has some exemptions.
Correct.
Referred to in 1985. Okay. AM says, in addition to paragraph A, right? In addition to paragraph A.
In addition to what, Your Honor?
Paragraph A.
Yes, I'm sorry.
1935-1A. Any requester who is an individual, a person authorized by an individual, has the right to inspect a record containing personally identifiable information pertaining to the individual that is maintained by an authority. And the right does not apply to any of the following. Okay? So as I read it, which doesn't have to be your reading or anyone else's, Mr. Linsmeyer is personally identified in this police record, right?
Correct.
He can ask for information about him, personally identifiable, except one, which is a record containing personally identifiable information collected or maintained in connection with a complaint, investigation, or other circumstances that might lead to enforcement action, right? Does this police investigation fall under one?
Your Honor, the way that we read the statute, it does provide a situation in which individuals are able to look at documents about themselves that other individuals would not be able to look at. For example, healthcare records is one example. The statute, however, then provides that even in situations where a specific individual has a right to look at documents about themselves, the custodian can decide that that would be inappropriate. If, for example, the police were to determine that allowing an individual to look at an investigative report or documents that they gathered in an investigation would somehow impair that investigation while it's ongoing, they can say, no, I'm sorry, we're not going to let you look at that document. And I believe that's what the statute is designed to protect. And in this instance, the police decided they didn't need to do that. The investigation was over, the report was finished, and they decided, no, it would be appropriate to release this document. The police, the requesters in this instance were the Post Crescent, and I believe two parents of students that were in Mr. Linsmeyer's class.
I'm going to ask my question differently. Is there a negative that you can draw from AM1 that says that if the individual cannot get the record, then no one else can either?
No, I think, Your Honor, the statute is set up so that it's the custodian's determination to make that call, and that an individual such as Mr. Linsmeyer or anyone else who's personally mentioned in that record does not have some sort of overarching public policy right given by that statute to allow him to block the release of that record to the Post Crescent or other individuals.
Well, let me just, 19.36.2, it says that law enforcement records are open, except as otherwise provided by law. It's the law enforcement records, except as otherwise provided by law, whenever federal law requires the record to be closed, it can be closed. Is that how you do that?
I believe that's correct, Your Honor. I'm not aware of any federal law that would require closure in this
instance. There's a negative there that generally law enforcement records can be open.
I believe that's correct, Your Honor.
Now, 19.36.6 says that you can separate information. If a record contains information that is subject to disclosure under 1935-1A or AM, and there's also information that's not subject to disclosure, then there can be deletions and redactions.
That's correct. That statute does provide for redaction, and in this instance, I think everyone anticipates that some of the names of these young women that were interviewed in this report are going to be redacted, and that that would not be publicly available information.
If I could put this in a concrete setting that corresponds to this case, although not precisely so, let's assume that Mr. Linsmeyer, the teacher involved, the parents of the students who were interviewed by the police, and your client, the Appleton Post Crescent, walked into the police department and all made an open records request for this police report. The custodian would evaluate the newspaper reporter's request under sub 1A, right, the general right of access, and Newspapers Inc. versus Breyer, and might, in that instance, decide that under the balancing test of Newspapers Inc. versus Breyer, access should be denied. You get a police blotter, but you can't get this report. But then the teacher and the parents of the students involved, because of sub 1M, have a greater right of access because the documents pertain to them. And then the analysis under AM and its exceptions would kick in. And then after all that's done, we get to the Wozniacki weighing and balancing, which is a right that inheres in the individual who is named in the records.
I believe that's correct, Your Honor.
So it's a series of balancing tests.
Well, the statutory inquiry is probably not the balancing test, but ultimately you do get to the balancing test. But there's no question that Mr. Linsmeyer could have requested this report. I'm not quite sure why he did not, but he could have and would have had a right to it under the statutes.
Well, let me follow Justice Sykes' question because she opens up a very interesting area. Well, let's just reverse it a little bit. The post question is the three come in simultaneously through three different doors. And they all put an open records request on it. And the custodian denies the record to the postpresses. Then with respect to Linz, because he's named in there, does he have any rights over and above the postpresses? Under 1 a.m.?
Yes. Wouldn't he have a right of access, but not necessarily a right to block?
That's correct. I mean, he has a right of access to this record under the statutes that we're talking about. Of course, if the police determine under the statute that it's inappropriate to release it to him at that time because it would interfere with their investigation in some way, they would have a right to do that. If they decide, however, that this isn't going to interfere with their investigation, they could go ahead and release it to him. But I don't think, Your Honor...
But I guess what I'm asking is, where does AM sub 1 come into play? Because I think sub 1 refers clearly to a police report. And it seems to make special exceptions for a police report. Any record containing person that is collected or maintained in connection with a complaint, an investigation that may lead to an enforcement action. Well, this is, seems to me, an investigation that may lead to an enforcement action, and that section denies release. But when does it come into play? I guess that's what Justice Sykes and I are. She seems a little bit more confident of that than I.
Again, I think it would come into play, Your Honor, in a situation in which a record custodian determined that for whatever reason they thought it inappropriate to release that record to the individual. I don't think the statute provides any sort of specific right to that individual to block the release of the record. It's the custodian's statute and the custodian's right to make that determination.
In your brief, you say there are only three exceptions to the strong presumption of public access. Specific statutory exemptions is one. Is it your view that under AM 1, that's not a specific statutory exemption?
Correct. I believe that in this situation, that does not give Mr. Linsmeyer the specific statutory exemption that he would need to be able to rely on that statute to block the release of this record. What we're talking about in this case, I believe, is the balancing test and the application of how that applies in this specific instance. The court is to conduct the balancing test on a case-by-case basis. The position advanced by the appellant and opposing amici seems to be suggesting that this court should make a categorical determination that police records, when they don't lead to arrest, should never be subject to public review and access. And I think that's the wrong result.
I disagree with that. I don't think that's their position. At least, as I read Mr. Meredith's brief, what he is asking us to do is to weigh certain factors, is to tell direct lower courts to weigh certain factors. And that's, I want to get into whether or not you have... He lists seven of them, that the custodian or the court should look at the fairness and impartiality of the documents, the seriousness of the transgression versus the person's public position, whether the documents contain interviews and how reliable are they, what action was taken in weighing the frivolousness of the complaint, in other words, the troublemaker. Is the custodian the one who should be making that, is the correct one to be making the evaluation? And a couple more. Can the documents be used to make mischief, and how high-ranking is a government official? Do you disagree with that?
I read those principles and factors that Mr. Meredith suggested in his brief, and I think in large part we do not have a problem with record custodians considering some of those interests. However, the way that WEAC's brief has framed the application of those factors in this case, I think, is misguided and incorrect. And so I don't think, however, that the court should get away from the fairly straightforward balancing test that it has articulated on a number of occasions in the past, and which I think works quite well to be able to determine whether records should be released to the public or not. The legislature...
What is that test?
The balancing test in this instance, stated broadly, is simply, does the public interest in access or openness outweigh the public's interest in non-disclosure or secrecy? More specifically in this case, though, Your Honor, the balancing test, I think, asks, does the public's interest in knowing what happens in its schools outweigh the public's interest in protecting the privacy and reputational interest of a public school teacher who has admitted making comments of a sexual nature in his high school classroom? Mr. Linsmeyer has...
But what's wrong? What's wrong with in articulating that test? At least one party here says that doesn't do enough. That's the skeleton, but that skeleton needs a lot of flesh. And they are articulating or urging this court to adopt some of that flesh, i.e. those seven or eight factors. What's wrong with the court taking those into account?
If the court were to articulate that some of these factors are appropriate for the custodian to consider and to take into account both at the custodian level and the trial court level, I don't think that would be problematic. I would not like to see the court adopt a test that says these are the only factors you're supposed to consider and establish any sort of bright line rule. It could say these are appropriate factors to consider, and you know, now that we're looking at them in this instance, again, I think that they're applied incorrectly. But some of those principles indeed are correct.
Well, but how does a trial court know whether the interview has reliability and whether this person is just making mischief or is a person who's seriously concerned with what's happening? It seems to me if those kinds of tests are there, then at the trial court you'd have to just do a factual investigation. Trial court would have to bring everybody in, and everybody would have to testify so that the trial court can evaluate that. How can you just evaluate that by looking at the record? And then, should this be a closed trial court hearing and a trial court closed evidentiary record?
I don't have all seven of those factors in front of me right now, and I didn't mean to misstate my position that some of them were correct. I'd like to look at each of them, but I agree that there are some that are problematic. Here, Mr. Linsmeyer has suggested that the complaints that the parents filed with the police were baseless, that they were designed simply to besmirch his reputation, and that the parents requested this report simply out of idle curiosity. Idle curiosity. I found that to be a remarkable statement. Mr. Linsmeyer has admitted making remarks of a sexual nature in his classroom. It was done in a math class, not in a sexual education context. And the students, their parents, and the general public had a justifiable right to be concerned about that conduct going on in the classroom. And when the school district, in their opinion, didn't take sufficient action, they had a justifiable right to go to the police. The police then determined that it was appropriate to investigate. They decided, yes, there's something to look into here. We should go talk to the students and other people at the school. They compiled their report. They ultimately determined after that investigation that it would be inappropriate to pursue any charges against Mr. Linsmeyer. But that ultimate determination hardly means that this complaint in the first instance was baseless or unfounded, or that the parents were merely trying to create mischief in the first instance.
We have to, in this case, don't we, say something about the status of police reports under the open records law and establish, either as suggested by Mr. Meredith or in some other way, methodology or legal analysis for custodians and trial courts to use when applying the open records law to police reports.
I think
do you have something to suggest about that, other than, you know, how you want this particular case decided? I understand your position about that, but what sort of overarching methodology should we be arriving at for this, determining the status of police reports? This has high significance.
Sure. I believe that the court should continue to apply the balancing test. I don't believe that it should adopt any sort of reverse presumption or any other sort of test that goes away from the balancing test that this court has applied for many years and that trial courts know and that custodians are familiar with. You know, additional factors probably would be helpful, and I believe some of those are identified in our brief, but just for example, I think you would look at whether this was a public employee, whether they were engaged in public misconduct, I mean on-the-job misconduct. I don't mean to suggest, however, that in this situation a private employee would be able to get away with saying, in situations where I've engaged in sexual harassment, the public doesn't have a right to know about that. In fact, the Court of Appeals decided exactly the opposite about 7 years ago in the Graham versus Olson case. But the distinction between whether someone is a public or private individual should weigh into the balance. Whether that individual was engaged in on-the-job or off-duty conduct, whether it took place 20 years ago or whether it took place in a public classroom, you should look at, for example, how high-ranking of an official you're dealing with. And in this situation, Mr. Linsmeyer has suggested that he wasn't the president of the United States. He wasn't a Green Bay Packer. And as a result, the public doesn't have all that great of an interest in finding out about his public conduct because he was really just a low-ranking official.
But I think Justice Sykes' question went to police reports in general. And don't you and your clients have an interest in making sure that in recognizing, maybe not an interest, but do you recognize that police reports, I read police reports for 4 years as a district attorney, they're filled with raw data, unverified data, scandalous gossip, that if released to the public could, you know, certainly cause embarrassment at the very least. How do you answer that concern with police records?
I believe police records should be subject to the same test as other documents that contain information about public employee misconduct. And in this instance, you know, I believe that report contains that. We don't know exactly what's in that report because we haven't seen it yet. But
almost anything that warrants a police investigation will give rise to a public interest in disclosure of the contents of that investigation, or at least arguably.
That may be correct, Your Honor, and the legislature has specifically stated in the open records law that public access is to be presumed and that only in the exceptional case may access to a record be denied. So I believe the legislature has made that determination. Now, if Mr. Linsmeyer or some of the opposing amici think that it's appropriate to close police reports to the public, and that for some of the reasons that Justice Babich was articulating, you know, perhaps should not be disclosed to the public, that's an argument and a categorical exemption that they should be making and seeking from the state legislature, not from this court.
Are police reports, the reports themselves, the contents of the investigation routinely produced to reporters who ask for them? I used to be a newspaper reporter. I remember getting stuff leaked to me, but I didn't get the whole file.
The media has a right to ask for these documents. In some situations, it's more difficult to get them than others. But but they do get access to them.
Are you saying, so I understand that police reports are generally available to any, well, if it's the media, then it's anybody. So anybody, I just don't think that that is the present state of what is going on out there. Now,
again, if the police reports involve a private individual that, you know, doesn't have any relationship to the public eye, that may be a different situation. However, as we know from Breyer, the arrest records are open. And police secrecy, I think, is a very dangerous sort of principle to uphold. Secrecy is not the Wisconsin way, and it's not what the legislature has determined to be appropriate in this instance.
But it sure is comfortable.
Excuse me, Your Honor.
I said it sure is comfortable to know that you can close records up. It seems to me that this is why I read you 1936 subsection 2. It makes a special exception for federally required secrecy for for law enforcement records. Presumption then is that all the other law enforcement records are open unless you fall under an exemption or you want to redact something. It seems to me your argument should be if any of these problems exist in the file, then the custodian can redact or the trial court can redact. If the requester objects to the redaction, then you got a lawsuit on your hands.
Well, there's no doubt that some of the information contained in police reports or in personnel files, such as Social Security numbers, probably would be subject to redaction and that would be appropriate. But when you're going to the heart of what the misconduct was involving a public employee, that is information that the legislature has determined that the public has a right to know about under the open records law.
Well, let me question that premise. One of the briefs, I don't recall which one, referred to the legislative history of this section. And that went to the governor, in which it said after a year or 2 years, whatever, now this information becomes public. And the governor specifically vetoed that, which was upheld by the legislature. And he vetoed it by saying, I don't think criminal defendants should have a right to look at who's been snitching on them. Now, that to me seems to weigh against what you've just said, that the legislature intended that these be open. It appears that the legislative history, at least arguably, is completely the opposite. How do you answer?
The Wisconsin Open Records Law specifically states that access to public documents should only be denied in exceptional circumstances. While I confess I don't remember precisely the legislative history that you're talking about, I would suggest that one statement by the governor that may be contained in legislative history does not trump in any way the general presumption that this state's legislature has adopted in the open records law regarding public access.
Could I ask you here, on 1935 AM 1, if Mr. Linsmeyer asked to see the police report, is he absolutely entitled to see that?
Mr. Linsmeyer is entitled to see the police report unless the police or the custodian determined that it would be somehow damaging or disruptive to their investigation to release that document to him, or somehow, you know, would endanger public safety. Justice Babbage was mentioning the Monfils situation, I believe, from a couple of years ago. And I think it is appropriate in some instances that we've got to be very careful about releasing documents for fear of public safety. There's no question about that. This instance is not one of them, and that should not be the general rule.
Well, as I read the statute in AM, Mr. Linsmeyer would be in a position stronger than, say, the Post-Crescent but the statute says the right to inspect or copy a record under this paragraph does not apply to any of the following. And then it goes into one, police record. It seems to me, and tell me if I'm wrong, that the custodian could deny the police record to Mr. Linzmeyer.
It could, Your Honor. I believe that it could.
Now, let me ask this question. Is the Post Crescent, as a requestor under one, in a stronger position than Mr. Linzmeyer under AM? 1A than under AM?
No, I don't believe so, Your Honor. We're not suggesting that the Post Crescent has a stronger interest in access to a document about Mr. Linzmeyer than Mr. Linzmeyer does himself.
I'm not quite sure about if I'm tracking your answer to follow up Justice Prosser. If the investigation is closed, then what's your response with regard to AM1? You understand what I'm saying? AM1 says that may lead to an enforcement action. I thought your response was going to be, well, the file is closed, therefore it's not going to lead to an enforcement action, and therefore it's available. But that's not your response. So what am I missing?
All I can say, Your Honor, is that I think in this instance, the Post Crescent and the parents' interest in access to this document is not any greater than Mr. Linzmeyer's interest in getting access to this document. I don't think that's what the statute intended, and I don't think that it would probably be a reasonable reading.
Okay, but can Mr. Linzmeyer get under AM this police report that is now closed, so it doesn't lead to an enforcement action, it doesn't lead to an administrative proceeding, it doesn't lead to arbitration or a court. He is now retired. There's nothing else involved with him. So does this, if he were looking for these records, would he be prohibited from getting it under AM1? I think that's Justice Bradley's question.
I don't believe that he would, Your Honor.
He's not prohibited.
No.
Why? Because it's closed?
Perhaps because it's closed, perhaps because it involves him, and the police department has determined for itself that it should be able to give it to him.
Okay, so it would, the fact that it's under AM1 does not necessarily mean he cannot get it. Because even under, if I understand your answer, even under AM1, you do a balancing test.
In a situation where the record is closed, it might be appropriate to do the balancing test.
Well, when it's open, it might be appropriate to do a balancing test.
I think there's a misunderstanding about the use of the word closed here. I think it's being used to suggest that the investigation is over, it's going further, there will be no prosecution,
right.
The police have closed their files. Not that the record is sealed or stamped confidential by a court or some other way.
That's exactly right. That there is no investigation anymore, there's no complaint, no administrative proceeding, no arbitration proceeding. You've got a police record, but it doesn't lead to anything.
Nothing about AM precludes the release of that report to the subject of the report.
I don't think so, Your Honor. May I briefly conclude?
You may conclude, Mr. Harrison.
Public school teachers should be accountable to the citizens that employ them. Mr. Linzmeyer's position in this case runs directly counter to that well-established principle. The public's interest in access to this police report vastly outweighs the public's interest in protecting Mr. Linzmeyer's privacy and reputational interest. The balancing test is not even a close call. The trial court got it right. This court should affirm and order the immediate release of this record.
Thank you, Justice Prosser.
This record, I imagine, contains names of students who were interviewed. Is the entire record, every single word, released here?
I think the understanding that I have, at least, Your Honor, is that in agreeing to release the record, there was the presumption and understanding that the names of the young individuals who were interviewed would be redacted and that the added information would not be made public.
Well, suppose the redacting of the names of some of the people in the report adversely affected Mr. Linzmeyer.
It seems to me, Your Honor, that the redaction of those names would not adversely affect Mr. Linzmeyer in any way. The allegations are going to be the same whether we have the young individual's names in there or not. Their statements are going to be the same, and that nothing about what they did or said about what they saw in his conduct is going to change.
But just let me give you a hypothetical. Suppose the redacting would adversely affect Mr. Linzmeyer.
I don't see exactly how that would happen, Your Honor. But in that instance, I mean, it seems to me that that is something that the record custodian could take into consideration. I don't really think it's an issue that's before the court right now. And, you know, that's something that the record custodian should consider. Thank you.
Thank you, Counsel. Mr. Meredith, you have 5 minutes in rebuttal.
I'd like to begin by making a confession that my oral argument did depart a little bit from my brief filed in this case, and the standards articulated, I think, are good for school standards. But about a week ago, I became concerned with the issues being raised by Justice Sykes, including we were being a bit parochial, and what the Court of Appeals really wanted resolved is police records, and there were two issues they were really concerned about. One is the new Dane County Gazette. Everything you wanted to know about your neighbors but couldn't find out through our police reports. And you get it in the police reports, you're probably going to be protected from libel and slander law. You can say anything you want. And if it becomes successful, I suspect even Doug Moe would have to reconsider his column. And that's one thing they were worried about. The second thing they were worried about is law enforcement. They were concerned that if citizens who were cooperating with the police would be singled out. Professional snitches are protected under the law. Ordinary citizens are not. And that's a problem. So I tried working backwards because I don't think anyone wants those two results to occur. And I concluded, as this last discussion shows, that the law enforcement laws were almost incomprehensible and contradictory, because at one point it seemed to suggest that the Mr. Linzmeyer couldn't get the record, but his cousin could and could give it to him, and it just became very difficult. So I worked back to the common law presumption, which was used in Faust. And my sense was, I do agree that you need oversight of the police. So the best I could come up with was a reverse presumption, which would allow police records to come out in certain situations, but would recognize the inherent unreliability and damaging nature of police reports that Justice Bablich just so accurately described.
How does this reverse presumption fit into 19.36 sub 2, law enforcement records?
Your Honor, it doesn't completely fit. I think you can glean it from it, but Faust went to the common law. You're allowed to go to the common law, and I think basically the only way to make sense of the current thing is for the court to go to common law. And I would suggest one thing in the Open Records Act itself that is frequently ignored. Go ahead.
I'm sorry, but I really want to focus on this. So I do apologize for interrupting. But as I interpret
sub 2 of 1936, and that's why I kind of stopped you from going to common law, because we have the legislature speaking here, and I want to see what the legislature is saying. As I interpret sub 2, it makes an exception where there's a federal requirement for non-disclosure.
Right.
And thus there is disclosure unless, with regard to law enforcement records, unless there is a federal requirement for non-disclosure. Well, that's how I interpret sub 2. How do you interpret it?
Well, I think that is the most logical reading. The federal law, and it's 5 U.S.C., and I'm forgetting the exact site, is much more inhibiting on when you can release raw police data. You have to go through a much more detailed test. But I think that only applies to federal law enforcement records. And so I don't think the feds can tell the state to follow their caution and concerns. But I would like to go something in the open record law itself. It says the public is entitled to the fullest and most complete information regarding the affairs of government as is compatible with the conduct of government business. And that often gets lost when people cite the presumption. It's as compatible with the conduct of government business. And law enforcement is a very unique business, and it needs its unique requirements. Otherwise, to be quite blunt, innocent people are going to get killed, not to mention innocent reputations being destroyed. Now, I'd like to perhaps go back to my parochial issue of how do we decide this as a school matter. We recognize this is a close case as a school law matter. And we don't have any dispute with any of these courts' prior holdings, which basically have said that with respect to personnel records, completed investigations of high-ranking officials engaged in serious misconduct cannot be shielded. We agree with that completely. We think every one of those things is an important factor. One is the investigation is complete. Secondly, how high-ranking the person is. And third, how serious is the misconduct? What we are trying to avoid is the standard urged by amicus, which is the micromanagement standard, which is basically the public are the managers of the employees because it's going to produce chaos and the public is not going to get effective government. And I think what the public wants most of all is for teachers to teach and for law enforcement to catch criminals, and if they can't do that, the open records law will be a failure.
Justice Bambridge has a question for you.
Your red light is on, but I have another question. One thing that disturbs me here, which also disturbed me and was Nikki, was that the custodian of the record was really not in a position to evaluate all the interests. And was Nikki was the district attorney here, it's the police. Because I think your co-counsel pointed out, the school board probably was in a much better position to evaluate all the interests of the school district, the kids, everything. What do you do then in a situation like this where it is the police who are the custodians who at least arguably really aren't in a position to take into account other interests that the public entity that's really at stake, the school board, is in a position to take account of? What do you do then?
My conclusion was Breyer majority had it right. They realized that police records were distinct, that should be released under much higher circumstances. And if you impose higher circumstances, those issues will be factored in the higher circumstances, higher requirements. I agree if you apply the general presumption, it's going to be very difficult.
So in this case, if in fact the request was made upon the school board and they granted it, would you be here? Or at least would you have as strong an argument as you do?
I would not have the argument, and in fact we may not be here because we may have agreed to release of the whole personnel file, which would have showed all the extremely positive evaluations over the long years of service. Now, clearly that would have been Mr. Linsmeyer's choice, but that's frequently what we do in response to open records requests. I would just like to close with 2 points. First, with Justice Prosser. Let's suppose the answer is, on the redaction, that the student had just been given an F by the teacher involved. I think that would be relevant. Unfortunately, it's a pupil record.
And the teacher would never be able to say the reason this charge was made is because I gave the student an F. And that is one of the problems in schools and all law enforcement where a lot of information is protected by privacy. And that's why I think one of the criteria is, can you get all the information out, or at least most of it? Because if you can only get a small part of it, it might be better to release nothing. And finally, I'd like to conclude with, I don't often get a chance to quote Justice Scalia, so I would like to at least cite to him. In the police amicus, he made an excellent point on the federal law, on the problems when legislation is passed, and more importantly, courts interpret decisions based on platitudes. Because they may sound great in theory, but they can produce chaos in practice and, in fact, undermine the very purpose of the statute. So that many times what you see, the people who the statute was supposed to be regulated using information requests to prevent being regulated. And it produces perverse results. So I do ask this court to realize that the business of government is difficult and to adopt a standard that recognizes these difficulties.
Thank you, Mr. Meredith. Thank you, Mr. Harrison, and thank you, Mr. Kaczynski, for your excellent arguments this morning. And we'll now close the hearing on 01.